Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Jeff Clark of Celtics Blog. The Celtics have taken over the rumor mill, so I imagine that is an exhausting endeavor. You've been at it for 12 years? Celtics Blog's been around for a long time, hasn't it?
Forever.
Forever.
You know.
Before the internet.
I like to tell people, you know, I was blogging before they had blogs. I was doing the HTML and adding web pages and things like that. And then when they invented blogs, I said, thank you, finally, someone's talking my language.
I started this whole thing, I thought, oh, I don't need a blog. I'll build my own site because that'll be cool, not knowing anything about HTML. And that was a disaster. It was a really, really bad idea.
Well, I just, you know, I've been around forever, so I've kind of seen it all, and I'm enjoying the wave. I'm enjoying the Danny Ainge tenure. It's been a wild ride.
It's been really interesting. I don't know, probably your entire life, because they were pretty good, right? For a while, they were a pretty good basketball team. Then maybe not so much. There was a Rick Pitino era that was really weird, and then they got, you know, Paul Pierce and swindled the Timberwolves out of Kevin Garnett, and they got Ray Allen and all this stuff, and eventually became champions again. They're trying to get back to that championship level. They go out and they draft Jaylen Brown. They go out and sign Al Horford. You have to be very impressed by the offseason, even if maybe they didn't go out and get every single star that was available.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. First of all, you know, I want to set the record straight. You know, there was the 80s. I remember that. You said something about a Rick person who I've put out of my mind. And after that, there's a lot of good stuff, at least a little further along, about, you know, Kevin Garnett and all them. Back to this present day, I've definitely, you know, I love what's happened so far in the offseason. The Al Horford signing alone is just a great thing to happen with the Celtics. And I keep talking about this being the most overlooked, at least in Boston, the most overlooked star signing in recent memory. I mean, it was sandwiched between the, you know, somewhat disappointment of draft night of not making a big blockbuster move, and then on the other side of it, the disappointment of not getting Kevin Durant. So, you know, Al Horford in all of the glory that was, you know, getting Al Horford had about a day, like one news cycle, to enjoy that glory, which is actually somewhat poetic considering that he's a very quiet, unassuming star player.
Yeah, you wrote something, Al Horford, the unsung superstar, on CelticsBlog.com that I really enjoyed, and he really, like, he's awesome. I don't know that a lot of casual fans are all that aware of just how good he is. He hasn't had the best playoff series against LeBron James over the last couple of years, so I think that can maybe taint some things in terms of how he's viewed. But like, he's an awesome defender,
has?
Right? Exactly. Not a lot of players have. He's an awesome defender. He's a really good offensive weapon that I think was underutilized in Atlanta, especially in their, you know, let's share everything offense. I think he can be an incredible weapon. I think he's the go-to guy for them moving forward. I mean, maybe Isaiah Thomas disagrees, maybe you disagree, but how do you kind of see that hierarchy shaking out with them?
Well, I mean, that's the great thing about Al Horford is he doesn't require a hierarchy. He doesn't have to be the guy.
Right.
He is a wonderful weapon to have in your arsenal, and he's proved that in all his stops. But, you know, if Isaiah Thomas wants to be the face of the franchise, fine. Go out there and smile and shake hands and kiss babies and recruit other stars. Al Horford is just going to make him better. He's going to set perfect screens. He's going to set, you know, he's going to be the anchor of the defense. He's going to do all those little things that make Brad Stevens happy, and it's going to make Brad Stevens look even smarter. So we've had these things the last few, you know, several months where, you know, Matt Moore gives us a hard time and says, because Brad Stevens. Well, now it's because Brad Stevens and because of Al Horford. So.
Right. And, I mean, that's kind of been the interesting thing to me is I haven't loved everything Danny Ainge has done ever since the big three, or I guess maybe they were a big four with the emergence of Rondo. But, you know, since that kind of dissipated and they broke that up, I haven't been a huge fan of the rebuilding. We can get to that in a little bit. But to me, like, the big thing was always, well, Brad Stevens is their biggest asset, right? Like, even sure. the draft picks of the Nets and all this stuff, like, I've never been that impressed with the roster overall. I've been impressed with the way he utilizes them. And I think that he's done just an unbelievable job of maximizing whatever skills are there within the existing roster. But this hasn't been that talented of a team. It's been a hard-working team. It's been a talented defensive team at times. But for the most part, like, it's kind of been a bunch of just like, oh, yeah, that guy exists. Oh, yeah, we have Evan Turner. Like, oh, yeah, Amir Johnson. Like, oh, I guess Kelly Olynyk's the player. Like, you know, it's really right. examples like that. But now that you get to throw Al Horford next to Isaiah Thomas and have them exist within whatever Brad Stevens is diabolically planning for them in the Eastern Conference. Like, I mean, I don't know what expectations you go into next season, but I mean, you've got to think like what, like being the third team is probably the least amount of success you can expect from them.
Well, you know, yeah, I'm kind of hoping for that. I'm definitely hoping for one of the top teams in the East. And, you know, in terms of Danny Ainge's rebuilding, I think he's always viewed it as from the perspective of building assets, and it's always a work in progress.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's an unfinished picture, and it always has been an unfinished picture, even though Brad Stevens has to roll out a lineup and actually try to win basketball games with these assets, if you will. So, like, I can see how not all the pieces always fit perfectly together, but you can see kind of what he's building, what he's growing, and it just sort of kind of reminded me of this painting that you're throwing in background pictures and sky and buildings and drawing a happy little tree in the middle, like, you know, and then at some point you're going to draw the focus, the subject of the painting, and we're still waiting for that. It's kind of this weird constant waiting for the next shoe to drop, the next, you know, fireworks to go off, if you will. And I think that's what, you know, there is an impatience with the Celtics fans, even though we're a little bit spoiled in that, hey, we already have a good team. It's a good, like, quasi-contending team, but there's always this essence of, well, you know, we're still a step or two away from the elite team, especially when they're building super teams like the Warriors and the Knicks, obviously.
And obviously the Knicks, of course.
So when you've got that level of talent out there and you have to compete with that, you know that you have to bring in another superstar, and we just keep waiting and waiting and waiting for that. So is Danny Ainge doing a good job of rebuilding? I don't know yet. We have to see what he does with all these assets, and either he does it and he fulfills the promise that he keeps promising us, or he doesn't. You know, and even, like, I don't know what the doesn't mean. Either he brings in somebody who's not worthy all the assets, or he brings in nobody and misses his opportunity, misses his window.
Right.
So who knows what that window is, but, you know, it's an unfinished product right now.
So you mentioned frustration with draft night. You know, a lot of rumors swirling around of, hey, like, Jimmy Butler could be available. I'm not quite
sure.
I don't know if there were DeMarcus Cousins rumors. I mean, there are always DeMarcus Cousins rumors, but I don't know if there was anything prevalent that night.
Just hot yoga.
Maybe after he tweeted, "Give me the strength." maybe something popped up. But I don't know if this is the right way to put it, but, like, you just end up with Jaylen Brown, right? And Yabu and Demetrius Jackson. I'm sure I'm forgetting someone else. I know there was someone else in there. But you kind of walk away with, like, this nice little, I don't know, group of players, and this nice little group of I get, like, flawed but still, like, good project prospects.
Right.
But, like, I don't know. Like, me, I'm very high on Jaylen Brown. Like, I loved him going into the draft. I was hoping he would be high on the Timberwolves board. Obviously, he wasn't there when they picked because he went number three. But I, like, yeah, he's got issues. His jumper's not very good, and he's going to struggle to make shots. But he does kind of fit that mold of, like, this guy can do a little bit of everything, and he's going to be an awesome defender. And so then throw that in with the Celtics development, and throw that in with, you know, have him work with Walter McCarty and have him coached by Brad Stevens. And then where could he be 5 years from now? Like, I don't know. I thought it was successful, but I get that there were frustrations.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the burden of expectations. When you get Woj saying, you know, there are advanced talks on Jimmy Butler literally minutes before the Celtics make their pick.
Right.
And then, you know, and all that is based on the fact that we're going to take Dunn and use him as a trade chip. Then when, you know, Adam Silver walks to the stage and says, you know, Celtics have selected Jaylen Brown. It's like, what? And so that, you know, the Celtics fans at the TD Garden booed the pick. And it's just like, that's not a great feeling for a guy to get picked third overall and have his you know, the team fans boo him. You know, it's an auspicious start. But, you know, he's quickly won over fans as the disappointment has died away and people have come to grips with the fact that, you know, a trade didn't happen and there's still chances that we could do some more trades. So you have a chance to let a little bit of time, you know, have a little breathing room and understand, oh, well, this guy's actually a player. He could be a very good player. So let's give him some time and see how he does.
What did you think of how he played in both the Utah and the Vegas Summer League?
I thought he did great. All things considered, I mean, it's a, you know, summer league is summer league. It's
right.
It's a weird, weird league, and you know, it's a little concerning that he didn't shoot that well, and in fact, he didn't even make a lot of layups at times. But he was definitely forcing the issue and getting to the line a lot, which is a great first step. You know, it's what made James Harden almost an MVP one year. So that's a skill that, you know, you can't really, I guess you could teach it, but it's something that he's already put into his game, is getting to the rim and creating contact and forcing the issue. So that's a good positive sign.
Of the young guys that they have, I don't know that any of them are really great prospects outside. I mean, I guess maybe Jaylen Brown could turn into that. A lot of people are still very high on Marcus Smart. Defensively,
right.
He's just a monster, right? Like, he's almost going
right.
to be, like, give him like two more years, he's going to be an unfair defensive player. But he is, like, through the first two seasons, like, he's historically like the worst shooter of the three-point era.
Right.
Does the offense concern you? Because he's like a pretty solid playmaker, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's just, you know, it's one of those things where the speed of the game is still kind of catching up to him in terms of on the offensive side, at least. And I'm hoping that maybe in his third year, something kind of clicks and he kind of figures things out and whatnot. I mean, we've been itching for him to drive more. I mean, he takes those, you know, those shots, which is probably what the defense is giving him because, you know, they know the book on it. He can't shoot. But we're, you know, itching to see him drive to the hole a little bit more, you know, get into the teeth a little bit more, and maybe having an Al Horford setting the right pick will, you know, free him up with a little bit more space and things like that. So I'm hoping that, you know, like you said too, like, I hope he can get even somewhat of a average jump shot. So, like,
yeah.
You know, work his way up to average so that he can at least be respectable from that range. So and that could be, you know, mid-range or three-point land. I'll take anything at this point.
Why were we all, or maybe you weren't, but I know I was, why were we all so wrong about James Young? What the hell happened there? Because I really was excited about him coming out of Kentucky, and like, he had the big dunk
right.
in the tournament, and like, he seemed like he checked all these different boxes, right, of
right.
What you would want in a prospect, and it's just been like he's almost just doesn't exist in a way.
Yeah, the infamous Bill Simmons fist pump when we got to that pick. Yeah, he was highly ranked, and he kind of slipped in the draft a little bit, which is why, you know, Simmons was happy about it. And maybe we're finding out now why, you know, he did slip a little bit. He's just the gist that I get from listening and reading between the lines and you know, hearing, you know, gossip and whatnot, is that he's just not that hard a worker. Or, you know, the team will say things like, oh, he's working hard in the offense in the off season, et cetera, et cetera. But I've got this gist that he's just not working hard enough at his craft to make himself better. So here we are in a year, what is it, three now or something like
yeah.
that, where he just has no idea what to do on defense. And that's a problem. I mean, when you're clueless, when the summer league coach says he's benched him because he wasn't playing very well in the last game, that's not a good sign. So he's not going to be on this team much longer, as far as I can see.
Yeah, I mean, it does. I don't know if he's a guy that everybody should give up on. I mean, maybe it will take a different situation to kind of get him focused in and or whatever.
Sure.
But it also seems like, I don't know, if you screw up the situation where you're being coached by Brad Stevens and you have the support of the Celtics franchise, like, I don't know that there's a lot of different situations that at least look better or even comparable on paper in terms of developing a young guy.
Yeah, I mean, like, ironically, the guy who might be James Young's best case scenario for his future career, he could pattern it off of his who they just signed.
Gerald Green.
Gerald Green.
Right. Like,
so maybe James Young, you know, bounces around, you know, China for a couple of years, and then comes back and says, you know, I'm really willing to put in the work, and here my jumper still works. So that alone might get me on an NBA team. So, and ironically enough, he's being replaced by, you know, Gerald Green.
Exactly. That's got to be exciting to, like, one, find out that Gerald Green's still in the league, and two, that you bring him back into the Celtic green, because he was, like, that was an exciting time for a while.
It was the only thing to cheer for a little while.
Right, exactly.
As you're well aware of, because we sent them to you.
Right.
By you, I mean, you know, the Wolves.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, do you think Gerald Green gets playing time on this team? Like, they're kind of stacked everywhere in terms of the perimeter, right?
Yeah, I think he's depth, he's insurance, and one of the holes on the roster last year, surprise, surprise, was shooting. So one thing that Gerald Green can do, or at least has proven to do in the past, is shoot the ball. And presumably, if we need someone to come in and hit a few shots, then he can be someone who can, in theory, fill that role. It's really kind of telling that we have two guys that we've drafted in recent years, and James Young and R.J. Hunter, who their best skill is their jump shot, and we brought in Gerald Green to do the shooting that they can't do. So it's unfortunate, but, you know, that's what minimum guys are for, to come in and fill holes.
Yeah, I was pretty excited about R.J. Hunter, and I was surprised that he fell as much as he did in the draft, because it seemed like, you know, he has that skill of shooting the ball, even though he wasn't that great shooting his last season at, what was it, Georgia State. But it, you know, what was always surprising to me too is, like, talking to Robbie Callen of CBSSports.com and a guy who's very familiar with RJ Hunter. He, like, I was like, hey, RJ Hunter, like, he's gonna be good. And Robbie was like, I don't know about that. I watched a lot of RJ Hunter and I don't think he's that good. I don't know that, you know, I don't know that he's also a guy that you just give up on. But it's strange to me that, you know, for a team that needed shooting as much as they did, and even though he's just a rookie last year, that he wasn't able to find even a little bit of success.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, all the rookies were, and it's amazing to say all the rookies because we had so many of them,
right.
We have another bushel of them again. But, you know, they all kind of had their cup of tea with the big club, which actually got some rotation out as healthy again and things like that. So they were all used at some point last year. But, you know, and, you know, I still have hopes that RJ Hunter is, you know, going to get it and he's going to, you know, find his own role on this team. But at the same time, he's, you know, you have to have a 14th man. You have to have a 15th man.
Right.
And right now, RJ Hunter is just one of those guys. So, and it was ironic, too. Like, you know, when he was ranked pretty high in the draft last year, and when we passed on him to get Terry Rozier, I was, you know, pretty, you know, surprised, at least, and disappointed quickly too, because I'd never even heard of Terry Rozier before. that just shows how little I look into the college game. But then we picked up RJ Hunter, and I was like, well, that's who I would have picked at, you know, 16 or whatever we were picking at. So score, I guess.
Right.
And then it turns out that, hey, you know, Terry Rozier has looked a lot better this year, and is probably going to get some rotation minutes this year, even though there's a lot of guards on the roster. So I'm actually pretty high on what Terry Rozier did in the summer league, and have high hopes that, you know, he'll be able to fill some of the ball handling duties that Evan Turner did last year. So
you got to be pretty excited to not have to pretend to like Evan Turner anymore, right? Maybe this is my bias coming through in this question. Maybe it's a loaded question, but
I just
don't enjoy watching him play basketball. So I just don't. I find it hard. Like, there's a lot of guys where I'm like, all right, I don't really like that guy, but I get why other people would like him. I don't get the Evan Turner thing. So I just assume, no matter what your answer is here, that you're excited you don't have to pretend to like him anymore.
I am excited we don't have to pay him like a superstar.
Right, exactly.
I'm, you know, I was right there with you. I was right there with all the critics for most of his tenure. You know, I saw what Brad Stevens could get out of him, which was more than most other coaches, but I was never fully bought in until kind of like, you know, halfway through the season last year, he kind of clicked in his head, oh, I shouldn't be shooting three-pointers, and right. so I should be doing these other things. And so I kind of bought in a little bit, and I also really loved the, you know, the quotes that he gave and stuff like that. But I was never fully 2 feet all in on the Evan Turner experience. He was a nice guy to have around, but, you know, I'm not going to mourn his loss too heavily either.
That's your nice way of saying that you agree with me on this. At least that's what I'm going to say in my head.
Hey, you know, whatever you need to do.
You mentioned the draft of like Rozier, Hunter, and then actually Jordan Mickey. And so I want to get into like the whole Danny Ainge thing. Because, and you made a great point earlier of like, look, this is a painting in progress, and sure. and we don't really know what the finished product is going to look like. And I think that's a great way of looking at it. I also think that, like, in his drafting, I guess my biggest problem is like, you grab all these picks, you have all these assets from drafts, and I just don't like his drafts for the most part.
Yeah.
Like, I like the Jaylen Brown pick. Avery Bradley turned out to be a fantastic pick, obviously. Like, there are some good ones here and there. Kelly Olynyk looked to be a great move at this point. But, like, there is Fab Melo. I was never a Jared Sullinger guy. The last year's draft was so weird to me because I actually liked the guys that they got. I just wanted them in reverse order. Like, I wanted it to be, like, Jordan Mickey, R.J. Hunter, Terry Rozier. And that's the weird thing that I have to, like, kind of reconcile in how I judge the rebuilding process of Danny Ainge, or I guess retooling, or whatever he wants to call it, is like, I guess if as long as you get the guys that you should get, it shouldn't matter what order they come in, right? But it does seem to be like there's always the process versus results thing, and I don't really know how to wrap my head around it.
Well, neither do I, and I'm trying for, you know, most of his tenure. Part of the thing is with Danny Ainge is he has such a long track record. I mean,
right.
he's got so many picks that, you know, on my blog, you know, people come out and they list 10 busts that Danny Ainge has picked, and you know, the other people come saying, okay, here's all the 10 sleepers that he picked up that were drafted way lower than they should have been, you know, well, they were drafted low and turned out to be great. I mean, basically, like, his first draft was, you know, Marcus Banks, I think, was
right.
the first pick, turned out to be a bust, but Kendrick Perkins was one of the last picks, like a very late pick, and that turned out to be, you know, great based on the position that they drafted him in. You know, you can cherry pick all kinds of, you know, bad picks. You know, there's the Fab Melo, R.J. Giddens, and you know, I'm blanking on names that have, you know, since
Juwan,
you know,
Johnson or something. Yeah,
Juwan Johnson.
Right.
And you know, but then there's all these picks. You know, Rajon Rondo, Avery
right.
Bradley, Tony Allen, Al Jefferson even was, you know, pretty low. So, I mean, yes, he's had some good ones. He's had some bad ones. I think he's mostly a risk taker. Like, he will gamble on the guys. Like, you know, Jared Sullinger and Fab Melo were both examples of guys that were ranked pretty high and fell all the way to where we were picking. And it was like, well, they've got talent. Let's roll the dice on them. I think he also... And when you gamble on stuff like that, you're going to have some hits, you're going to have some misses, but
right.
you know, you do the best you can.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I guess I kind of, maybe that's my own anticipation or expectations or issues with that, but it does seem like, and when you get this a lot with the Celtics rumors that are just, you know, seemingly constant, and they always seem to be after the fact as well, of like, look, they're going to get this big guy, and then we're going to be, like, blown away by how genius this plan is, and I keep waiting for that shoe to drop. Now, granted, like, they got Al Horford, and that's a big get, and I think that's
right.
that's a great step in the right direction, because the whole thing with, like, Daryl Morey rebuilding in Houston was they remained competitive, they kept trying to get the star, they finally got James Harden in a trade, and then Dwight Howard came. All right, that didn't work out, but, like, at least you then start getting stars, right? I don't know that Al
sure.
Horford's going to be a James Harden, but that's still, like, you got to get the first one before you can get the second one, which is just
yeah.
brilliant a bit of analysis for me. But but it does seem like, I guess the problem I have, and maybe you can help explain this better, is it does, like, after something has happened that is not as spectacular, it's like, oh, by the way, we could have gotten this guy, and we could have gotten that guy, and all these leaks come out. And to me, that's frustrating.
Well, yeah, and you know, there's been buzzwords that, you know, Celtics fans have been repeating for a while, you know. You know, a couple of years ago, it was fireworks. You know, Rick Grosbeck was saying, oh, I think we're going to have some fireworks this summer. And then nothing ever happened, and we give him a hard time about that. And then, you know, this year, all summer long, anybody who talks from the Celtics keeps saying something like, along the lines of, we're not done. This is even after the Al Horford thing. So we're all kind of like, you know, leaning forward on the edge of our seats, just waiting and saying, okay, what is this? And every time there's a rumbling, say, you know, some vague rumor about the Los Angeles Clippers, and we're like, okay, Blake Griffin? You know, and so we're just waiting for that next star to break loose and be brought in. We've, in essence, we're back in 2007, and we've traded for Ray Allen, and we're waiting for that Kevin Garnett thing to
hit.
And so we're just waiting for that next big piece to come. And like I said, if it never comes, then okay, there's definitely something to question there, and there's a frustration level. But not being in the room, not knowing what the Bulls were asking for in return for Jimmy Butler, not knowing what, you know, the Kings want for DeMarcus Cousins, we don't know whether or not he should have made any deals or not. Yes, we're impatient. We'd like to see him do something, but, you know, that's just my fandom and not just my impatience as a fan. Like, I don't know whether or not he should have done something yet. And I'm actually of the mindset of go ahead and overpay. Like, you sometimes you've won all these deals. You hose the Nets. You got a whole bunch of other good picks, like from, you know, Rondo and things like that. So you have this storage of surplus that you can go ahead and overpay for a star now if you have to, but not if it completely leaves your cupboards bare. You know, you can't just gut the team and then have just three guys playing. So
right, and you can't gut the team and overpay for Russell Westbrook if he's not going to be there in a year, right? Like that's also the risk that you run in playing that game.
And there's the rub. Yeah.
Right, exactly. If you have to guess who the next Kevin Garnett is, not saying they'll be Kevin Garnett, but like who is that next guy? Is it Westbrook? Is it Blake Griffin? Is it DeMarcus Cousins? Are you getting back into the Kevin Love business? Like what's going on there?
We'll always have Fenway. no, like, you know, whoever becomes available. Like, you know, I mean, I think age is ready to pounce on whichever one lines up the best and whichever has the best deal and things like that. Like, right now, my guess is it's either, you know, Russell Westbrook or Blake Griffin. But Danny Ainge sometimes has, you know, smoke coming out, you know, all over the place, and then will do something completely out of left field. So he's sometimes quiet and he's sometimes, you know, leaky as anything. So we'll see. Like, it could be, you know, Gordon Hayward. It could be someone completely random, and we just wouldn't see it coming. I don't know.
Yeah, that's also an interesting kind of way of looking at it. Is like, it, I don't know how many of these rumors do you think that we see that eventually actually become true? Like, it does seem like all of the major trades that happen, like, we never hear about these deals, right? Like, I don't even know if you would call this a major deal, but, like, the Serge Ibaka trade was out of nowhere, right? Like, that's
right.
Like, that was one where it was shocking because it was like, oh, I didn't even know Serge Ibaka was on the trading block.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I would say that, you know, that these GMs and league officials or whoever is doing the talking, they talk about dozens of things, like even more than we talk about. And, you know, scenarios get bandied about, and as much as they try to deny that, you know, they've never talked about things and all they've been talking about is, you know, golf games and stuff like that. Bull, you know, it's just, they talk all the time. I think there's so many ideas that are tossed around there and discussed that we never hear about, so that, you know, when something comes up, yes, there'd be a lot of noise about this other thing, but sometimes something comes out of nowhere and the two sides actually, you know, do manage to keep it quiet. And I think a lot of, with this rumor stuff, is you always have to play the game of, okay, who has the motivation to leak this?
Right.
You know, if it's stuff coming out about DeMarcus Cousins, maybe it's his agent who's leaking the fact that he's unhappy.
I can almost guarantee it's his agent.
Well, I'm trying to be nice. But,
right.
You know, and then, you know, if there's another guy who, if you leak, you know, bad stuff about, you know, Blake Griffin's knees, well, maybe that's us trying to drive down the price. And by us, I mean the Boston. So who knows what motivations these causes these leaks to happen. But I think they're all kind of playing a media game by that.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I do wonder, I don't know, I wonder if is it also just maybe like it's a smart business tactic with the Celtics, right? Because it keeps interest year round. Because you never know when Danny Ainge is going to you know pull the trigger on a trade and bring in that next guy, and it just it's there's no way it's bad publicity because if a deal doesn't happen, it's hey the deal didn't happen. Whereas if you keep everyone interested, like you just keep. Well, all right, this is going to be an unfortunate choice of words because I don't want to tie you to it, but it, like, builds a fever pitch, right? Like, it does build that like, Boston fever pitch of, like, hey, the Celtics are on the cusp of something great, and everything with the Celtics right. is about being great, right? Like, that's just the history.
Well, I mean, I'd go a step further. Like, you know, all of fandom, if you want to call it that, is either you're rooting for a contender that's about to win, like contend for a championship, or the team is selling its fans on hope, you know?
Right.
You're always hoping that, you know, even the Sixers are hoping in the process is going to yield results someday. So we're all kind of hoping that something new is going to come up that is going to make all of our fandom seem more worthwhile because behind this thing that finally built into a championship. So, yeah, absolutely. It's great for business to sell that hope, and frankly, it's great for blog business. I'm happy to ride that wave.
Yeah, I guess the clicks come through pretty nicely when there's a trade rumor, right? Like that, I guess that does kind of scratch everyone's back in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, not that I'm trying to drum it up for no good reason, but right. You know, I really love this stuff. I really dig trade rumors. I find like-minded people on the blog that really enjoy it as well. And if somebody, you know, doesn't like it, they always have the option of not working on the site.
Right. When I asked you to come on the podcast, the first thing you brought up is you wanted to talk about Ricky Davis and Mark Blount. Which, that's just like, I love Ricky Davis. And two, I love to crap all over Mark Blount. So, like, those are two... two just prized yes. Timberwolves moments for me that I'm very happy to discuss.
We have a symbiotic relationship here. It's very much a shared experience. the only trick is that you guys didn't have Mark Blount show 2 months worth of upside and then sign him to this, you know, major long-term deal and then see him completely mail in the next 4 years of his life. Then again, you traded us Kevin Garnett and had Mark Blount to show for it, so I guess I can't really...
Right.
I don't know. That is one guy you will not see a lot of love for in Boston.
They moved him, right? Or no, they waived him? Because didn't he end up on the Nuggets at one point? And then he was back and then he was back on the Celtics? Like, I kind of feel like the Nuggets traded
him. Oh, yeah,
him.
Yeah. So he was, before he had a good season, he was an okay prospect. And I think we traded him to the Nuggets, and I think he might have gotten waived in camp or something like that, and we kind of picked him up, and all of a sudden he had this great half of a year, and then he became this big free agent signing that we kept. So who knows? I mean, that was there was a big dark era back then. And
right.
Even in the early Ainge years when, you know, we brought in guys like Gary Payton and there's just some
Kenny
weird
Anderson?
Years. Kenny Anderson, yeah, that was a little bit before that. But, but even Sebastian Telfair, all the guys they sent to you, I mean, they shouldn't be news to you.
Whatever crappy players you had that you needed to move for Kevin Garnett.
Watson, Jetson, you know.
Right. My favorite Ricky Davis moment, well, no, my favorite Ricky Davis moment that happened on the Celtics was, and I've talked about this a few times on the podcast, is he's coming down on a fast break. It's just him. He tries to go between his legs for a dunk and misses. He goes and grabs the rebound, which I think went out to, like, I don't know, around the free throw line area. And then he just goes in and does a simple windmill dunk before, I think it was against the Lakers. Like, I want to say, like, Kobe Bryant came in at the end of the play to maybe speed up that windmill dunk. But to me, that's like the perfect embodiment of Ricky Davis just like going for the highlight at any chance while trying to make a basket. There's also a one from early in his career when he was on the Cavs where he goes between the legs on a fast break when they're down 20 in the fourth quarter, which is just an amazing decision to make in life. Did you enjoy the Ricky Davis experience?
Oh, Ricky Buck. Ricky is going to get buckets.
Yeah.
I mean, we actually had a fan section called the Get Buckets Brigade.
Yeah.
And they, like, you know, they came in. Anybody who came in and, like, showed up to this event, wearing a bucket on their head or something crazy like that, got tickets to this, you know, bleachers seat, high up in the bleachers area. And they just had this banner for Get Buckets Brigade. And I, you know, we had a ball with it. We just, I mean, what else was there to cheer for when we were, you know, winning 20, 30 games a year? But, you know, a few highlights from, you know, Ricky Davis and his afro. And I think the first time we got in national television that year, or one of those years, was when Ricky Davis had the audacity to get his own, to shoot at his own basket in order to get a triple-double. So,
it was a great move. It really was. He's an innovator. You know, he was trying new things before anyone else was willing to take the risk. I implore him to do more of it.
I mean, he's a trailblazer to Rajon Rondo for stat stuffing. I mean, come on.
Exactly. Yeah, Rajon would have never been the player he was without Ricky Davis coming before him and showing us the way of how to do this. And then later on, like, I think JaVale McGee tried it. I think Andre Blatch tried it. You know, I'm not saying he should be in the Hall of Fame. I do think he should have his own Hall of Fame.
Well, he should be in the Shaqton Fame.
Yeah, 100%. Why haven't the Celtics retired his number 12? They retired everything else. Why can't they retire number 12?
Politics.
That's got to be what it is, right?
I blame everything bad on politics.
But. Yeah, no, that's a safe bet. And then, you know, I do. We've mentioned a couple of times. I do think either you speaking for the Celtics or someone needs to apologize to the Timberwolves fandom. For the Kevin Garnett swindling via Kevin McHale, who was clearly a spy for, what was it, 13, 14 years before finally giving Kevin Garnett to the Celtics?
Yeah, in my most sincere, respectful tone, I apologize for just inflicting Mark Blunt on you, never mind taking Kevin Garnett and leaving you with the GM of, you know, Kevin, shady deals with Joe Smith, McHale. My apologies.
I don't think people realize how bad Kevin McHale was at being a GM. I mean, he was obviously an amazing player. Like, just like one of the all-time greats. Like, even like he should be remembered even more so than just for his post moves. Like, he was a special player.
He's
a pretty solid coach. Like, he had to fill in a couple of times for the Timberwolves. I think he had a decent run before the Houston Rockets situation was just. I still remember last season. I was there. The Rockets had lost their first two games by 20 points apiece, and the third game was in Miami. I was there, and he came out before the game for his press conference or talking to the media, and he looked like, I can't do this anymore. I mean, that's like, it was already that bad last year, and that should have been the warning sign of, like, this Rockets team sucks, and they are not going to get it together and be what they were.
Run away.
Yeah, exactly, run away. So I think he was a pretty solid coach before that point, but as a GM, it's great that he drafted Kevin Garnett. Like, he had the foresight to take the kid out of high school, and
sure,
he and Flip Saunders, you know, created a great situation there, but the Joe Smith deal, losing the 4 out of 5 picks. But here's the thing. I don't know that those 4 picks that they lost would have gained anything for them because he was really bad at drafting.
Well, it's a good thing you got David Kahn after that.
Right, right, exactly. No, I'm surprised that Danny Ainge didn't find a way to just take everything from the Timberwolves with the David Kahn trade.
I don't know, man. It was, you know, sometimes you get good luck, sometimes you get bad luck. We've been blessed with good luck here since that Rick guy left, and that we have, you know, Danny Ainge, and he's had his ups and downs too, but at least he hasn't, you know, totally split an entire franchise. But yeah, there's good times, there's bad times, and hopefully the Wolves are on the uptick with the young talent that they have.
I swear to Peck, if you guys try to take Carl Anthony Towns in 8 years, I am going to. Well, I'm not going to do anything, but I'm going to be really upset. I'm not going to be happy with that.
Well, maybe we'll get Evan Turner and trade him to you guys.
I think that sounds like a very Timberwolves kind of move to make. If you can throw in, I don't know, maybe James Young will still be available at that point. They can sign him back and then move him.
Yeah.
In the deal, and that could
be
work.
Bill Green, remember? It all comes full circle.
Right, exactly. Jeff, I really appreciate the time to have this conversation with me. This Celtics team is super interesting, and I really am looking forward to the season. What is your prediction for where they finish in the East? I know it's August, so predictions are meaningless anyway.
Of course.
Championship. Eastern Conference champions or NBA champs?
Atlantic, is that still a thing?
Sure. Yeah, divisions are still a thing, I think.
No, I'm hoping for either second or third in the East, and I'm rooting for a trip to the Eastern Conference Finals, where who knows, anything can happen, but unless a trade happens like somewhere down the middle of the year, or even later on this offseason, we're kind of set up to be that next tier down after the Cavs. It'll be us and the Raptors. So, if no other trades, and honestly, who knows? Let's just say we make it to the Eastern Conference.
I think that is a great goal to have, and I am excited for this team. Follow you on Twitter at CelticsBlog. Read you at CelticsBlog.com. Fantastic Celtics. Just website that you guys really do a great job of kind of dissecting everything, and you could see how it would just go towards like a really homeristic view, but you guys are very balanced. I enjoy it quite a bit.
We'll have to turn up our Tommy quotient then.
Turn up the Tommy quotient, and I don't know, maybe we kick around a Ricky Davis week at some point. It's still,
ooh,
still the off-season.
I like that.
Yeah, I think that's something that you guys would really excel at.
Well, we are definitely going to do a history week soon, and it's kind of hard to fit him in between Bill Russell, Red Auerbach, and Bobby Cousy. Bobby Cousy, what am I talking about? basically, all the greats on the team. But yeah, I think we can probably work in some Ricky Davis talk.
Yeah, it's either him or Bill Russell. I know who I'll vote for. But you guys, I don't want to be the editor for your site. You guys figure it out on your own.
You're welcome to be the editor for my site. We could use some more help.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Jeff, I appreciate it. Thanks.